I'm going to be reading one of my favourite parts. It's one of the only parts that still made me laugh after having read through this 17 million times, which is no pressure on anyone else to laugh. You can all just keep silent. No, it's fine. If anyone wants to read along, I'm on page 80. Harry was about to inspect the club for other telltale signs of death, destruction, despair, demise, or even mild depression, when a light smattering of applause announced the first tragedosaurus. He wasn't sure what to call the man climbing the steps to the stage, slowly, sighing. His gait was heavy, his arms limp at his sides. In a monosyllabic tone, without the merest hint of enthusiasm, the unsurprisingly stoop-shouldered and droopy moustached man began narrating his life story. "Everything was just dandy," he started, "until I was 6 days old. My mother was carrying me to the hospital for a checkup, and on the way there, a woman defrosting her freezer on the ninth floor of a block of flats threw the half-melted chunks of ice out of the window, not thinking to look before she threw. I was struck by sharp, freezing cold chunks of ice, or so I'm told, and when we finally arrived at the hospital, the doctors found that I'd gone temporarily deaf. Somehow, nobody could determine the exact reason. Something to do with exposing my newborn ears to such extreme cold. The temporary deafness turned permanent, and to this day, I can't hear a thing." He paused, filling his lungs with stale air, and sighed slowly into the microphone. Harry blocked his ears with his hands. "My childhood was happy enough," the deaf man continued, using the same monotonous tone. "Filled with the usual taunting and bullying, people stealing my hearing aid and my lunch, tripping me after class and beating me up on Fridays. No worse than that any other average hearing disabled kid. But there were good times too. Mute classical music concerts with my parents. Long silent phone calls to our overseas relatives. Dinner around the radio every night. Seeing my mom and dad chuckling as they listened made me as happy as if I'd heard the voice of myself." The man tried to smile. He managed the half grimace. "After school, I got a series of poorly paid menial jobs. Car guard, street sweeper, dishwasher. Until I finally landed the job of my dreams, managing a McDonald's drive-thru." He lifted his head momentarily as if looking at a distant, dreamlike horizon. Then he dropped it again, his chin resting on his heart. "Unfortunately, due to severe vandalism, my branch had to close and I was retrenched. But I remained hopeful that something better would come along soon." He gave another huge sigh that crackled through all the speakers in the club, causing one or two startled patrons to drop their drinks. "You see, the tragic part of my story actually only happened a few months ago. I'd been going out with this lovely girl for about 2 weeks when she threw herself off a bridge and died. At the same time, heavy flooding destroyed the contents of my first floor flat, and the damage costs were much more expensive than I could afford, so now I have nowhere to live. My best friend, Pookie, he is, or should I say was, a hamster, drowned in the flood, and while I was trying to find his corpse, I lost my hearing aid and I can't afford to buy another one." The room fell silent as he paused, catching his breath. "Of course, I'm sure things are going to pick up soon. I mean, compared to some people, I'm living a life of ease. And my parents are still alive, although they're both senile and neither of them recognize me. What goes down must come up, though. Hey, always look on the bright side of life. That's what I try to remember." He looked out over the audience, as if searching for some hint of affirmation that his positive thinking would one day pay off. Dour faces looked back at him. There was an awkward pause. "So, that's my story," the man finished lamely. "Thanks for listening. You're a great crowd." He turned to trudge off the stage. Harry was horrified. He wondered briefly if the man was making it all up, unwilling to believe that anyone could have so much misfortune in such a short space of time. In comparison to that poor blighter, he realized, his life was unparalleled bliss. In fact, he wondered if he had any right or reason to be in the tragedy club at all. He felt suddenly as if he were faking a family tragedy to get a discounted bereavement fare on an airline, or playing sick to get off school, whilst all around him people dropped to the ground with diphtheria. Harry had a rather vivid imagination. Deeply shaken, he glanced around cautiously to see if anyone else was as affected by the story. It seemed not. In fact, he could have sworn he saw one or two people scoffing to their neighbours, unimpressed. But Harry felt quite ill. He was just about to claw his way out of the pit of depression the man's story had thrown him into, when a young, slightly overweight woman limped on stage, leaning heavily on a cheap plastic walking stick. "Hi," she began in a soft voice. "Thanks for being here tonight. My story began when I was about 5. Harry's noisy ear intensified. He felt himself slipping back into the dark pit as she spoke. Both parents and all seven siblings killed in a car crash. Orphanages without enough food. Numerous freak accidents that left her without two fingers, a clown juggling knives, without eyebrows, an overzealous street vendor cooking sausages, and with severely impaired eyesight, a welding display to fate, without the customary warning not to look straight at the welding rod. The limp was not even mentioned. Things were just looking up when she was demoted at work from being the porta potty coordinator to being one of the porta potty cleaners. And because her eyesight was so poor, she often misjudged where to aim the contents of the porta potty bins, which resulted in a large portion of the excrement urine mixture splashing up into her face. This had caused a rare allergic reaction that often left her short of breath and with severe heart palpitations. She had no medical aid, so she had to wait in line for 4 hours every time she wanted to see the medical students at the monthly clinic in her area. They had no idea what to prescribe yet, but she was confident they'd find something soon. When the girl had finished talking, she remained behind the microphone, as though waiting for someone to rush on stage and say, "Don't worry, I've got the answer." No one moved. The hardened crowd was a little put off by the whole excrement in her face part of the story and hoped she'd get off the stage soon. Undeterred, the girl pursed her lips, swallowed, took a deep breath through her nose and started singing, "Find every mountain, ford every stream, follow every rainbow, till you find your dream," in perfect atonal pitch. Harry was beginning to suss out the tragedy club situation. He was the only one who clapped.